CGSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
I'm Jesse Brown, and today we're going to talk about those nifty little AI summaries that you've been getting lately when you search for something on Google, and how they might be the thing that finally kills the news business dead for good.
There's an almost apocalyptic fear setting in. If referral traffic from Google goes to zero, there's really not anything else to replace it with.
Wait for that.
Welcome back. Google making a rare change to its homepage, the most visited website in the world, pushing its AI mode tool directly into the hands of its billions of users.
Yeah, it turns out that's not true. Google's AI mode is not available to billions of users. It's available to Americans. I want to try this out, though. All right, I can VPN into New York here. Connected. And let's see if I could find Google AI mode. I will ask Google a question, very important question. This I'm used to, AI overview. We get this in Canada. But if I say show more and go to the bottom, ooh, it's like, there's like a rainbow that's flashing. It says dive deeper in AI mode. All right, I can try it out here. Here we are in AI mode, and it's very clean looking. And here is the answer to my question. Who is the best podcaster in Canada? Answer, there's no single best podcaster in Canada. Wrong already. Some highly rated and popular podcasts that are well produced and loved by Canadians include, for news and current affairs, Front Burner, and at number two, Canada Land. AI is such bull. All right, those were the results from this new product. Much ballyhooed. Google AI mode, not yet available in Canada. But as mentioned before, we are increasingly getting AI-generated answers from Google as the first thing we get from Google when we search the web. The whole concept of searching Google to find the right website is over. Google does not want you to click on a link and go somewhere else. Instead, they are giving users, as the first thing you see, an AI overview where it analyzes hundreds, thousands, millions of websites to give you an answer right there on the Google page. And everyone in the news business is losing their f***ing mind about this. Earlier, you heard the voice of Nilay Patel, who is the host of the podcast Decoder from The Verge. Patel is the person who coined the term Google Zero. And Google Zero is what happens when the amount of traffic that Google sends to news publishers equals zero. So what happens to publishers on the web then? Death, maybe? Does that sound hyperbolic? Is The Economist hyperbolic? Here is an Economist headline. AI is killing the web. Can anything save it? That is a pretty drastic headline for The Economist. Here in Canada, David Skok at The Logic has a piece, What Happens to the News Business When People Stop Clicking? This is not speculative. This is not the end is nigh, we're all going to die. It's already happening. Since Google started serving AI summaries, traffic to news sites has fallen off of a cliff. Whenever I talk about traffic, I'm talking about it falling off a cliff. It's like we're running out of cliffs. We had a huge decrease in traffic when Canadian legislation led to Facebook and Instagram and Threads stopping the ability for us to even post news in Canada. And then both Twitter and Facebook started to radically decrease the amount of traffic they send to news sites. And now this. And for many publishers, it is more than they can take.
Hi, my name is Mike. I'm the creator and publisher of the Mountain Weekly News, a 20-year-old outdoor gear review site that has been completely wiped off the map in the latest Google updates.
Hello, my name is Ani, and I'm an editor at televisions.org, an independent entertainment website. Since the March 9th Google update, our traffic has slowly collapsed, about 75% at this point, and falling.
My name is Rasmus, and I run eRideHero.com, which is a micro-mobility website where I test products based on cold, hard performance data. Today, I'm getting around 4,000 visitors a month, so more than a 95% drop.
Like a lot of things, we here in Canada may be the last to reckon with this, because this technology is advancing rapidly. And like I said, the next step in the evolution is already live to users in the States. It's probably going to hit here in Canada very soon. So what happens then? I am going to try to figure that out today with my guest, Ben Smith. Ben Smith knows this stuff up and down. He literally wrote the book on it, the book about web traffic. It's called Traffic: Genius, Rivalry, and Delusion in the Billion-Dollar Race to Go Viral. He wrote that book because he saw this firsthand when he was the news editor at BuzzFeed, synonymous with viral clickbait, also synonymous with breaking big news stories. Ben Smith went on to be the media critic at the New York Times. Today, he is the co-founder and editor-in-chief of Semaphore. He's the co-host of the Mixed Signals podcast, which is all about the media. You might like that podcast. It's well worth your time. And Ben Smith joins me in a minute. We're going to talk about what this means for you, the news reader, and I want to know what this means for me, a small news publisher. We're rolling. You good to go?
Yep, good to go. Thanks for having me on, Jesse.
Always good to talk to you. Tell the people, what is Google Zero?
Google Zero is a future in which publishers who depended on search traffic from Google find that there is no more. I mean, honestly, from my perspective, it's a feature of a collapsing web, of this thing called the World Wide Web that at least I grew up on. So that's honestly, it's been in retreat for a while, getting fully replaced by everything from ChatGPT to TikTok.
It's when we stop getting traffic. News sites just stop getting traffic from Google. People search for something on Google and they get an AI answer that's based on our news stories but doesn't connect to our news stories.
Yeah, by the way, that's already happening. Like, if that's what, that's how I use Google these days mostly.
What do they call it? A no-click-through search? Like you search for something on Google, and even before we got these AI overviews, you could kind of get your answer by looking at the two or three lines that were scraped. And that was already like 50 or 60% of searches did not result in a click-through.
Right. And so it's, I mean, and I mean, here is the problem for publishers. It's a better experience than scrolling through lists of things that, you know, were intended to get you to click and then clicking on one and getting an ad that pops up in your face. Now you just go to Google and you get a, or to your favorite AI chatbot and get a result that is like, you know, 80, 90% likely to be true.
Yeah, I want to get to that it's a better experience, because I think that in the rage that we're hearing from news publishers, that gets a little bit lost. But first, there is a problem, I understand. Like, I'm reading a wild range of statistics that publishers are seeing anything between like a 25 to 60% collapse of referral traffic from Google, which is 90% of traffic for most publishers. Does that jibe with what you're hearing out there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, at Semaphore, we sort of launched into this slightly post-apocalypse era, and so it's hard for me to, like, we in our small way are doing fine on what's left of the web, but the statistics that are out there are huge declines, particularly for publishers whose core business was sort of responding to, you know, like, how do I open my garage door type searches, or more meaningful searches, but publishers that were very dependent on search traffic are really sort of facing a being totally wiped out.
I mean, things were already bad. The bottom fell out of display ad rates. Facebook basically closed the door to news, like huge drop off in referral traffic from Facebook. Here in Canada, Facebook and Instagram just stopped sending any, you can't post news. So we had to deal with a massive sudden decrease in traffic to Canadian news sites that happened like overnight. The switch was pulled. Like, Twitter stopped being a very meaningful source of traffic to news sites. As you said when we started, like, this was already well underway. And then we saw the rise of things like TikTok, where people are getting information which are not even designed to send traffic off of. Like, the point is to capture that traffic. So this was like well underway. And I don't know if that means like, oh, so this is not a big deal, but it's just gotten a lot worse with AI overviews from Google. Or if this is like the death knell, like kind of an extinction event for anybody who is still relying on traffic.
I mean, I did write a book called Traffic, so I guess I ought to feel this more deeply. I think that, like, there's this thing where publishers rage against the preferences of readers, and it doesn't get you anywhere. Like, the reason that these AI overviews are kind of quote-unquote stealing traffic from publishers is because they're pretty good experiences. And I think, you know, publishers just have to reckon with a world that is changing really fast and that has been moving away from a kind of scale traffic-based going to the internet browser and typing in a URL experience really for a decade now. And it's been a long time since anybody even imagined that kind of like search traffic was going to fund quality journalism. And so I guess I don't have that much sympathy for people who didn't see this coming.
I mean, those who saw it coming, I'm trying to find a non-self-congratulatory way for us to have this conversation. It's been happening for a long time.
Yes, and we podcasters are unaffected by this.
Our business has largely been unaffected by this because we don't rely on organic like search traffic. That's not how it's hurt discovery. It sucks when we have a big scoop. But those still, if the scoop is good enough, it still works well for us. So it's like, who does this hurt? It doesn't hurt if you've been able to build a business based on subscription. It doesn't hurt if you've been like seen it coming and built an email newsletter business. It doesn't hurt if you've, you know, like everything but the kind of business model of your old shop at BuzzFeed, which was like very much about just trying to go viral as a business model. So that hasn't been viable for a while, right?
Right, and that was about social media, which, you know, it wasn't the same as search, right? I mean, as a journalist, I've always had a little bit of like a chip on my shoulder about search, because the thing about search is that you're looking for something that you already know exists, and the best journalism is always surprising. So search never favored investigative journalism, never favored scoops. It favored, I mean, the places that I think are most effective, that are really high quality things, are like Healthline. Right? Like it is a great service to be able to search and say, like, I have this spot on my arm. What should I do? Like that's like really good quality service journalism that lived on the web and was built into search engines and that ChatGPT is now like diagnosing that dot on your arm. That just seems to me like a shifting business model, not like a journalism apocalypse.
So who are the losers in this situation? Because there are companies that are kind of just shrugging this off and publishers that are shrugging this off. And it feels like maybe we're both in, like our companies are both in those camps to some extent. But people are claiming, I don't know if it's just a question of the big news companies who are launching major lawsuits, which I want to talk with you about as well, as a pretense to trying to get a big payout. But you're also hearing the stories of the struggling little publisher who is going out of business because of this. Who are the losers?
The big losers are people who are producing really great information with an idea that you were going to come looking for it. That's obviously health. It's like people who had recipes, you know, like hunting and fishing hacks, like whatever sort of useful servicey information you might be looking for that's just laying out there for you to find and hyper-optimized to trick the search engine. I mean, everybody who was publishing like 11 things you need to do when you visit Budapest, all that stuff. I think there are also really, really valuable parts of the internet that are deeply interlocked with search. I think Wikipedia, first of all, and that, you know, they're so vibrant, such an important kind of piece of human knowledge. It's not a business, but it's a nonprofit. But that is something that I think it's sort of tough to think about how that operates in an environment without search.
Yeah, it's a nonprofit, but it's a nonprofit that relies on donations from its users, and you have to be on the site to get that solicitation for the donation. It's funny. It hurts news businesses that are in the business of giving useful information. Phew!
Well, of useful information that isn't timely.
Right.
It's not particularly useful for timely stuff, which is basically what news is.
I guess that's true. And it's funny that you mentioned, you know, both recipes and travel. Like, I was just on a family trip, and like, you know, if I'm in a new place and I just have a question, like I wonder who conquered this island, you know, over the years, or I wonder what, like just give me like a general sense of the top five best pizza places. Like it was pretty good. The experience was great. And like you say, I didn't have to. It is a frustrating experience to go through the search results, scroll past the sponsored ones, try to make a quick value judgment about which of the non-sponsored ones look right, find myself on a new website for the first time that may or may not require a login. If it's the question of a recipe, they almost seem to be making it frustrating on purpose where I have to scroll down. Often get like, sometimes I'm finding myself in password recovery mode. Like it was terrible. And the AI overview, it's pretty sweet. It's pretty simple and efficient.
Yeah, it's an experience that had already begun to degrade. I think one of the things you see at big companies now is that, like, Google is putting its best people on AI, not on search. And it, search is becoming the legacy product, very important one. And, you know, I'm sure, and it's where they make a lot of their money. But they are very hyper-focused on making the AI experience great. And so, I mean, it's sort of a feature of the tech industry that they're incredibly sensitive to kind of disruption and to getting ahead of it. And so I think, like, there's a whole, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think search has been dying for a while as mm-hmm. we knew it. I think search plus AI is obviously going to emerge in some new form, but it's totally different from a whole universe in which publishers sold you advertising based on searches. I think it's that whole new world is to emerge.
And they have to be that way, I suppose. We can kind of vilify Google for, like, you know, dealing this death knell to publishers. But there are some pretty serious AI competitors who are looking to drink their milkshake. Search is up for grabs. If somebody gets ahead of them on this, then they could lose their dominance.
It's pretty healthy. Like, Google was accused of being a monopoly for a long time and is in, you know, litigation over that question in the U.S., but in the meantime is facing a really substantive challenge to its core business. And so, I don't know. I mean, I think that's, you're seeing kind of the market at work. And it is, and I do think, although it drives publishers crazy, it is driven by consumer preferences. And it is a feature of the news business that, and it's true broadly that if in most businesses, when consumers say, hey, we hate the experience and we hate everything about you, like, your impulse would be to perhaps listen to them and change your product a little. And in news, the impulse is to say, F you, you're wrong. You're being lied to by bad people. We're not going to change anything. And I think, like, you see that over and over again in news. I think the core things about journalism, to tell you something new, to make the world clearer, to help you put things in context, you know, those values aren't going away because of technical changes.
Well, it does feel very reminiscent of the attitude and the approach that the news business had towards tech from the get-go, even towards putting things online years ago, was just resistance and moralizing judgment against what people clearly preferred and wanted.
Yeah, that's right.
So we have been horrible apologists for Google and for AI up to this point.
I know. You should have had somebody on who was more willing just to say, like, these big tech companies are screwing us again.
I'll be that person for a second.
All right, good.
The fact is, people are using AI to get informed about what happened today. I just know this casually, that people are just, that's how they're trying to find out what's happening in the world. It just becomes where you get your information from, and you don't make the distinction between recipes and news. The results are getting better and better. News publishers like to pick away at where Grok goes all pro-Hitler or whatnot. Gets a lot of attention because of self-interest. It's worth noting, but it's getting better and better, and these kinds of embarrassing moments are probably going to get fewer.
It's like 10% less Hitler every week.
There you go. But the fundamental problem here is what you were alluding to earlier, which is that AI can only tell you what's already known. And where is it finding what is already known? It's finding it from news sites. If it puts those news sites out of business, then the quality of the news information that it provides is going to degrade very quickly, and it's going to become less and less. So, like, forget about our problem in the news business. Isn't this ultimately a problem for Google and for other AI search providers that, like, if the trend continues and if they're exacerbating that trend, they're not going to be able to, we're not going to have any more milkshake left in our cup for them to drink, and that's going to affect their product.
Yeah, I think that's a huge problem. And it's not really so much primarily about doing away with kind of search engine driven news sites as it is about doing away with the web and business models built on it, which also includes subscription. To the degree that you're talking or you're typing with ChatGPT, rather than, I would say both news publishers, also Wikipedia, also Reddit, also all the sources that these AIs trained on in the first place, you know, how are they going to get new information? It creates these weird dynamics that you're already seeing. One is in the public relations industry. PR sort of went out of fashion for a while, I think, for companies, because they'd rather just, like, put up some post that they wrote themselves and direct search traffic to it. But as that goes away, if you ask, like, if you go to ChatGPT and ask, what is Canada Land's reputation? What do people think of Canada Land? It's not going to scrape random comments from Twitter. It's going to tell you what the New York Times said. It's going to tell you what Semaphore said. It's going to go to authoritative sources. And so these PR people have realized that. And they're saying, well, our goal is to get, you know, good news about Canada Land into the AI answer. The only way to do that is to go to professional authoritative publishers who are sort of often failing or don't really have business models. And so you're having PR people who going to a CEO and saying, hey, you really need to talk to this random trade publication that nobody reads and you haven't talked to in years because the AI is reading it. And yet that trade publication's business model is not helped by this at all. I do think that's something that these AI companies with their huge amounts of cash are going to have to figure out. Like, how do they generate legitimate, high-quality sources of information?
All of this boils down to just people's, like, relationships with their screens and with their online experience. And if that is just increasingly a conversation between them and a chatbot, where they're not jumping off to different sites, then that is going to have an impact. So we could shrug off, like, I don't really care about a decrease in search traffic because that's not what my business is based on. But my business is based on people leaving that chatbot to go to their podcast app, which, I don't know, I feel a certain amount of safety that, like, that's just, like, not a good experience when I've heard AI try to replicate it. So, like, you know, in fact, it's a very human experience. You want to spend time with voices. And when people have tried to automate that, it's been, like, horrific. It's not good audio. But when I think about other sites that are really based on subscription for written content, well, that still is the web. And if people are just using the web way less because their primary relationship is with a chatbot, that's going to affect sites that don't really give about search traffic. They're going to lose their subscription base. They're not going to be able to find new subscribers.
Yeah, I think if you think of yourself as a website, you're in trouble. I mean, there are lots of ways to reach people. As you say, there are these sort of two trends going exact opposite directions. One is this AI-driven automation of everything. And the other is the rise of creators and this totally human connection and obsession with finding a person to connect to. And those are obviously like countervailing forces going in opposite directions. And so, you know, if you can find ways to build trust in the individual, in yourself, in individual people in your organization, in your news organization. I mean, that's what we've been very focused on at Semaphore. That is something that is resistant to the kind of AI commodity stuff. And I mean, it's just like a fascinating moment. It's a moment not unlike when we probably started out and it felt like everything was blowing up.
These countervailing forces are an order of magnitude of different size. What am I talking about? So yes, we can set up the notion that podcasting is a countervailing force where, like, it's just the opposite. It's everything else is getting shorter and shorter, shallower and shallower, quick little sound bites, quick little bits of information, 30, 40 minutes of people talking. Wonderful that we're seeing this flourish. In-depth information. Substack just crossed a $1 billion valuation. The fact that people are like, no, I want to actually have analysis. I want to connect with writing, with writers. I'm willing to pay for that. That's actually like a growth business seems to fly in the face of everything we're discussing about AI just destroying journalism and journalists' careers. And so we can start to build this idea that there is a countervailing pressure, but it also could just be like a little whimpering backlash because like one is so much bigger than the other.
See, I don't think that's true. I mean, I think, like, think about Hollywood. Like, do stars have power in Hollywood? Like, do individuals have power? Yeah, that's what decides what movie gets made. Not, I mean, there's been enormous pre-AI technological shifts in Hollywood, but what they've done is move power further and further from the studios and from the companies to the talent. If you think about our business, journalism, the most important parts at some level are, you know, being out there and on one hand gathering facts that are not on the internet. Like, that's not something AI can do. Getting the scoop, getting the, you know, insane 2003 Donald Trump tribute to Jeffrey Epstein. And then on the other hand, telling people about it as a human being who they trust. And I think those things are not going away. I think those are very obviously kind of defensible. I think everything about media has been moving toward more of a connection with individuals, less of a kind of faceless voice of brand. And it's everything in between those two that I think is endangered, right? Like the writing, the video editing, the shooting the video, the editing the story, the distribute, like all of the sort of production essentially is getting disrupted by technology.
I've consoled myself with this notion that we are in the most protected industry. If you're actually doing journalism right, at least by a certain value system, that it's about what people don't know yet, then you are in the most protected place from AI. It's sort of the one thing that it can never do is find out something that just occurred that has yet to hit the internet. And there's no greater application of our craft than to get a scoop, than to actually go out there and learn something that nobody knows yet. So all this can do, AI, is free up resources for us to go get more scoops. And every time I dare to think that, or say, and this might be the first time I'm saying it on the podcast, it's one of those moments where I'm like, this is the clip that's going to make me look like such a f***ing idiot. This is the stupidest, most self-centered, like, this is the thing that, like, I will be overtaken by events and proven very wrong, and this will be the evidence of the idiot who didn't see it coming.
When Canada Land listeners have all switched to, like, a slightly better AI-generated version of you.
Exactly. One of the first experiments I ran with ChatGPT was like, give me like 50 ideas for Canada Land episodes. It went through our archives. It figured out everyone's got a shtick. It figured out our formula, and it gave like 50, like they were great ideas for Canada Land episodes based on the headlines. The only problem is they were all false. You know, they're all like, this incredible scandal from a CBC host that you won't believe. It was all like, yeah, that sounds like a great story. It's just not true. It just hasn't actually happened. But yeah, if you want to reduce us to a pastiche, well done. It's finding out the actual thing and verifying it is the part that the robot can't do.
I do think in a world of where it's very easy to fabricate media, and where, you know, I was meeting somebody the other day, and I was a little late to meet them. So I asked ChatGPT, like, hey, could you just give me a quick summary of who this person is? And I knew, like, it's probably like 60% true, 70% true. I don't know which 70%, like, did he go to school in Mumbai? Like, I don't think that's true, but maybe. But it was like kind of good enough for me to get a directional sense of who this guy was before I had a cup of coffee with him. But I was also realizing, like, oh, I'm in an environment where I'm just going to like accept that I just interacted with some information that's like 70% right. And there's like a lack of resolution and clarity. And I think between that feature of AI, which is predictive text, it's telling you stuff that may not be true, and how easy it is to create fabricated media, how hard it is to distinguish, there's obviously a role for trusted journalism brands to say, this is a real video, this is a fake video. You've got to have somebody you can trust who will do that for you.
Can you anticipate or imagine a future where that core task, which is hard to machine replicate, of news gathering, is one that Google takes on for the purposes of search supremacy, or not even search at this point, but just informational supremacy? If you want to maintain in a position where people come to you as the authoritative source, and you have destroyed this ecosystem of authoritative sources, few players have the resources to actually replicate that and fund authoritative sourcing. Would Google ever take that job?
You know, I think it's interesting. I mean, I do think that's a really interesting question. Like, because you don't need, I mean, so much of news is 50 versions of the same story. The president said this today. And I do think, like, if you're Google, you do need the Associated Press or Reuters or somebody like that to exist and do a good job. I don't think you necessarily need to buy the Associated Press, but I think you should figure out how to pay generous enough licensing fees to things like the Associated Press and Reuters that they stay in business, which, by the way, by the standards of Google, is pretty cheap.
I was trying to find out before this conversation, you know, we went through this whole regulatory thing in Canada that resulted in, and this is also by way of disclosure, Canada Land being in a licensing agreement with Google, but one that is sort of like forced down Google's throat by government. And I was curious if that licensing agreement actually gave them the rights to scrape our content for its AI results. I'll admit that I actually asked Google's own AI overview if this was the case. And the best that I can infer is they don't have the right to do this. And I know that Canadian newspapers are suing OpenAI. There's huge lawsuits against Google. And the precedent has been established that they're willing to pay licensing fees for AI scraping rights in some jurisdictions. So I think the next fight is over. All right, you have an interest in keeping us alive so that you can keep scraping us. We have an interest in being alive, so let's make this a matter of licensing.
I do think that you're going to see places like Google, OpenAI, Anthropic license feeds of news, just like the straight news from the wire services, basically, or some version of them. But I don't really see why they would take regional newspapers and things like that. Maybe I'm wrong. And the big lawsuits are over training data and the use of things like the New York Times to train the models. But which, by the way, is a thing that has already happened in the past. Like, they're sort of, in a way, it's the last war. My basic view is it's a mistake to try to sort of stand athwart history yelling stop on this one, and that there is enormous demand among you know, human being among our customers. I think we should like think more about what our consumers actually want, which is, you know, they want exclusive information that you can't get anywhere else. They want trusted voices that you know are on the level and you understand where they're coming from. I mean, those are really core things that news